Once one clone was created, it took on a different appearance and walked out of the alley. Tsubaki's brow knit tightly as she focused, increasing her numbers one by one. Once the last of the 500 clones were created, she let out a deep sigh, closing her eyes and falling back against the nearby wall. Splitting her energy so many times was taxing, to say the least. If not for all of the training that she had done over the years, it was unlikely that she would have been able to perform such a feat. Petra was pacing back and forth within the shadow world, Thelsa watching her with a bemused smile.
They said that you were going to handle this personally, didn't they?
Petra nodded her head at Thelsa's words, but still seemed restless.
I know, but I can't help it. You remember the last time the Greater Pantheon carried out a direct purge?
Thelsa tilted her head, briefly recalling.
If I remember right, it was the trafficking trade that Aurevi mobilized her church for?
Right, Petra nodded quickly. The Greater Pantheon doesn't tend to do quiet. I'm just worried that they're going to march an army into the city and stir up a giant storm.
Thelsa's smile turned more and more amused as she listened to Petra's concerns. Though, for all we know, they could have been doing quite a lot behind the scenes that we never noticed. For now, I think it's best if we just see what happens. If there is anything that needs cleaning up afterwards, it won't be too much for us to handle.
That's right. Sora nodded her head from nearby. In the worst-case scenario, we'll just grab the gate and skip the 63rd floor. It wouldn't be the first time that we did something like that.
I know. Petra sighed, walking over to a chair and collapsing against it, her wings wrapping around her shoulders. But this is a proper, advanced civilization. It might not be on the scale of the Mitong, but they are still a massive group. It would be too much of a loss if we weren't able to make peaceful contact with them. Besides, we're not going to find civilized alien races outside of Fior anymore. We need to make this count.
As they were talking, the door of the room opened. The burly form of Maria walking in. Petra's head shot up to look at her.
Did you discover anything?
Petra asked, anxiously. Maria simply chuckled, moving to sit next to the small demoness.
Yeah, a certain figure was seen on the 62nd floor, making her way to the gate.
Certain figure? Did they send Lyfra?
Petra asked in confusion, though Maria shook her head.
No, they sent the fox.
When Maria announced that, not only Petra, but even Sora and Thelsa showed expressions of surprise on their faces.
They sent Tsubaki?
Petra asked, anxiously. Either this was worse than we thought, or they're going full scorched earth. I really hope it's the former. Sora couldn't help but let out another laugh.
It's not that bad. Remember, she was originally a ninja, right? Stealth missions are kind of her forte.
Petra muttered mutinously under her breath. Yeah, it's not like she earned the title Ancestor Fox by single-handedly stopping two giant armies from clashing, appearing as the first disciple of death. Sora's laugh abruptly halted, and she cleared her throat.
Okay, so she also knows how to be showy, but she's still a ninja at heart, right?
Petra took a deep breath, trying her best to calm herself.
Maybe. I'm probably just overthinking things. Though I suppose that it would have blown up a lot more if they sent Lyfra. She can't stay out of trouble if her life depended on it.
What if they sent Dana, though?
Thelsa asked, amused by the thought of it.
I'd say that Tsubaki was probably the best choice.
Petra felt a shiver run down her spine at the idea of sending Dana. Dana had far less in the way of public shows of strength since her appointment to the Keeper's service. However, one of her first true battle records was slaying someone on the brink of ascending to godhood. And then there was the Stone Father incident, where she sent an entire army of shadow monsters to intimidate a dwarven race. Or how she had been the one to personally end the invasion of V-Day by slaughtering a void god that others found to be unkillable.
Okay, I see your point. Maybe Tsubaki was the best choice for this. How will we know when it's done?
Petra asked, looking around at the others for any ideas.
I asked Aurevi to keep me up to date,
Mariah answered with a playful grin.
Said that we'll be wanting to establish proper relations once it's all cleared up. She seemed to like the idea, so I bet we'll get news before too long.
Petra let out a relieved sigh when she heard that, though in reality she wasn't expecting it to be done that fast. Although Tsubaki was known to be incredibly efficient with her work, the size of the 63rd floor of Fior was simply too large, with the possible targets spread out over its entire surface. At an optimistic guess, she thought that it would take at least 6 months before the job was done. As she was thinking about that, Mariah suddenly blinked.
Huh?
Petra looked over at her in confusion, as did the other two.
Sorry. Aurevi just contacted me. She said that we can start preparing the second diplomatic group.
Already? Petra's eyes went wide before she calmed herself down. Does she mean, like, reserve them in advance so that they're ready to go on short notice?
No. She said it will probably be taken care of by the time that everyone is chosen and assembled.
Even Mariah herself seemed to be confused by the information that she was reporting to the others. Suddenly, Petra seemed anxious all over again, as if expecting to return to the 63rd floor and finding a war-torn landscape. Within her wooden house on Sanctum, Aurevi couldn't help but snicker to herself. The noise caught the attention of Julia, who was sitting across from her as they played a game of cards.
I know that look. You're up to divine mischief, aren't you?
What, me? Aurevi asked innocently. Well, not this time. I'm just enjoying seeing some proper reactions to our favorite restless fox, she said, playing one of the cards in her hand.
Julia wasn't aware of Tsubaki's legend, so she wasn't sure what Aurevi meant.
Eavesdropping on others, then? I can't really help it when they ask me to keep them informed.
Aurevi stuck her tongue out playfully.
How has your orchard been coming lately?
Julia paused, a sly smile on her face as she looked over her own cards.
I've been experimenting with a new type of tree, but I don't want to make many of them yet. I'd rather wait until we're done moving.
Move? Aurevi's eyes went wide in surprise, almost dropping the cards in her hand.
You mean you want to move to Olympus?
Julia offered a small nod.
Now that you've said that they're setting up a proper garden, there's no reason not to. It just took me a while to prepare all of my trees. I don't want them to spread or leech the energy from Sanctum after we leave.
Aurevi had a silly grin plastered on her face when she heard that.
Obviously. And don't worry, you'll still be able to come here any time you want. The incarnation is still in place, after all. Oh, I'll need to talk to Tubrock about making some adjustments for us.
Julia couldn't help but let out a chuckle, assuming that Aurevi's reaction was quite similar to that of the people that she had been previously watching. Chapter 95. Naturally, 500 simultaneous attacks weren't possible, even if Tsubaki sent out that many avatars of herself. After all, each minister would have a different level of defense. Some might be in public, in which case the avatar would need to wait until they were in a secluded location. Some might be in well-defended bunkers, requiring her to navigate their defenses. Many, naturally, would be easy to target, but 500 simultaneous kills were unreasonable to expect. Thus, those that completed their tasks ahead of the others began to fill in the gaps, while those that were forced to lag behind waited patiently for their moment to strike. In situations like this, it was far better to prioritize discretion over speed. Still, it took less than a week for Tsubaki to finish after dividing her workload. By the time that she had gotten through the ministers, the president, and the few research personnel that had been infected, Thelsa had only just finished preparing for the second diplomatic mission. The group this time was much the same as before, but it was decided to leave Lifra out of the mission. In the first mission, her presence was required due to being the only one that knew about the situation on this floor, but now that information had been largely shared with the others. When it came to fighting and adventure, Lifra was a great ally to have on one side. However, when it came time to sit at a table and talk,
Lifra was prone to running up the walls out of boredom. Because of this, Lifra was given free rein to roam the city as long as she maintained a disguise. With this, the only members of the party were Jack and Thelsa's group. Fortunately, their return to the 63rd floor was not immediately met with the same level of detainment that they faced the first time. Instead, the officers that they had encountered before recognized them, and they were treated courteously. Sadly, they were not able to quickly meet with any government officials for some time. Inwardly, Petra worried whether this was a sign that Tsubaki had failed in her mission, and that the targets were on high alert. Alternatively, they could be recovering from whatever chaos she left behind, and they would only be able to meet with these officials after that chaos was cleared. While they were busy waiting for their meetings, Lifra was off on her own little adventure. She had been told that she could have fun, and that they wouldn't interfere with her plans, so long as she maintained her disguise in the city. Naturally, this led her to want to explore. What Petra hadn't expected was that the target of Lifra's exploration wasn't the city, but rather the second gate of the 63rd floor. With the city spanning the entire layer, the other gate was in a location known by many citizens. Having received this information previously, Lifra traveled to the appropriate district, splitting off a clone to investigate the next floor, as per the standard protocols. What her clone reported back did not particularly surprise Lifra. Unlike the 63rd floor, the 64th did not have any form of advanced civilization. There were signs of a tribal society near the gate, but all that was left of it was burning ruins. For the brief moments that the clone was present in that layer, it could feel that it was being watched. Now, normally, this news would deter a would-be explorer, as it indicated the presence of a powerful and hostile force, one that had the intelligence to stalk its prey. Such people were not Lifra. As soon as Lifra realized that this was the lair where James had originated, and that there did not seem to be any memetic effects that she needed to worry about, she all but dove through the gate. On the other side, Lifra came to a well-lit wasteland, smoke rising up from various directions. Lifra could only assume that this smoke came from the ruins that her avatar had mentioned, and thus began to immediately run towards it. She could already feel the presence watching her, and grinned happily. The only reason that she noticed this sensation was because of her world sight, as the energy used for detection was otherwise unnoticeable. "Does that make these guys natural saint bodies?" Lifra asked aloud, though she was obviously not expecting an answer. Even if the presence watching her was inclined to answer, it had no way of understanding her speech. It took her roughly half an hour of running to reach the ruins that her clone had spotted from the portal. These ruins were crudely constructed stone structures standing dozens of meters tall, or at least the ones that were still standing were. Many of the structures were broken, the entire area surrounded by craters. Lifra swept her world sight over the area, feeling the remnant energy in the air. This was within the last 24 hours, right? The natural energy fluctuations haven't completely subsided. Lifra crossed her arms, thinking about her situation. From what she had experienced, these creatures were masters of manipulating natural energy, and even imbuing it with spiritual strength. I could call the Munchkin, but she probably wouldn't want to run the risk of fighting the people from this floor. Wasn't she really good friends with James? I wonder if I can just call him here, she asked aloud, before her eyes suddenly widened. Oh, Dale! 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 Answer the call! There was a faint groan in response to her call. What is it? I was just preparing for the release of Ascension. Huh? Oh, right! That was today? Wait, no. I'll try it later. Anyways, I'm on the 64th floor right now. The keeper paused for a long moment before replying to Lifra's comment. You don't mean the 63rd, do you? Nope. I went ahead to check out the next place while the others were busy having their meetings. Didn't you say that James would officially be one of your people once someone made it here? That's right, the keeper answered. though he still seemed shocked by her sudden revelation. You remember that he said that his race was incredibly combative, right?
Oh, definitely.
One of them is actually preparing to launch a giant fire wave at me now.
I should probably go deal with that.
As Lyphra said that, she could feel an intense wave of heat rapidly approaching from behind herself. Her foot stomped at the ground, causing a large wall of stone to erupt behind her and intercept the blast. Despite this, she could see the stone turning red and liquefying. At the very least, it gave her time to get out of the way.
"That wasn't a very nice greeting, mister," she shouted,
facing a translucent entity that hovered in the air more than 3 kilometers away. The entity simply watched her for a long moment before raising his hands to the sky. Dark clouds began to swirl over Lyphra's head, and she felt static rising in the air.
"Now you want to fight me with lightning?"
Despite the figure's hostility, she could still feel the mysterious presence from before that was watching her, causing her to groan in frustration.
"Fine. It's time for a tactical slime," she shouted,
clapping her hands together. She knew the fighting style of these creatures since long ago, so it wasn't difficult for her to adjust. As for this lightning bolt, well, she was quite the proficient druid herself, so she was able to redirect it with ease. When I heard Lyphra's message, I couldn't help but want to confirm it. Thankfully, I was already in the admin room to prepare for the release of Ashley's new game, so it wasn't hard for me to find James with the map. As I did so, I saw new options that hadn't appeared before, including the Smite button. Thanks to this, I was able to truly confirm that James was now one of my people. More importantly, it should be possible to give him access to the Heavenly Gate, like Tsubaki and the others. I'm sure that Chelsea would appreciate that, even if James very rarely came to visit. Rather than assigning this to him right away, I made a mental note to approach him and ask him for his opinion on it. If it wasn't something that he felt that he'd want, there was no point in spending the 10,000 points to use it on him. If he did want it, however, I would be more than happy to oblige.
"And that is why you don't mess with the tactical slime," Lyphra shouted,
standing high in the sky above the translucent figure, a spear of light radiating in her hands. The figure that had attacked her before now lay wounded on the ground, its body pale. If the creature looked as if it was going to attack again, Lyphra planned to deliver the finishing blow. However, before she could do so, a much larger figure appeared near the first, standing between it and Lyphra. Finally, Lyphra could sense that this figure was the one that had been watching her since her arrival. The figure stared at Lyphra, and she began to wonder if it was trying to communicate somehow. Part of her was thinking if she could take the figure's life story to decipher its language, but soon realized that doing so would alert the entity and send it into battle mode.
"I can probably take him. But is there a need to fight?"
she asked herself, reluctantly. If there was not a need for confrontation, she certainly didn't want to be the cause of it. After a few moments, the tall figure gave off a general feeling of annoyance, but disappeared, taking the smaller one with it. Lyphra blinked, staring at the sight of her previously fallen foe.
"Wait, was that just its dad?" she shouted out,
feeling that she had been scolded for playing rough in the playground.
"To be fair, it could have also been the mom. I don't know their gender characteristics," she muttered, looking around.
The buildings in the previous ruins looked like they were more of a fit for the smaller of the two figures, so Lyphra thought that this truly might have been little more than a playground for them to play around in, and that these fights were just part of their games.
"Well, on the bright side, it didn't immediately attack me. Maybe it thinks I'm just a kid because of my size," she thought,
her brow twitching. Although she'd managed to get out of the situation without conflict, the idea that she had been mistaken for a child irked her.
"Okay, so I'm using the body of a child, but still, it's a completely different race, and I thought that they'd judge more based on strength than appearance."
Unfortunately for Lyphra, there was nobody to answer her speculations or complaints. The only thing that she could do was contemplate whether she wanted to change her appearance. Despite her looks, it had been a long time since anyone truly saw her as a kid.
No, I can't do that. She shook her head quickly to dismiss those thoughts. This is my brand. It's my image. I won't let them taint that. I'm going to track that old man down, and I'm going to knock some sense into him.
Chapter 96. Fisher's eyes jolted open, his back covered in a cold sweat. It had been more than a decade since the last time he had actually slept. With how peaceful things were starting to look now, he decided to indulge between training sessions and drifted off during a brief period of meditation.
What was that?
He thought back, trying to decipher what he had seen in the dream. Unlike some of the other prophetic dreams that he had experienced in the past, this was not a particularly long one. Per his recollection, it should have only lasted a month.
Lady Udana, may I have a word?
Fisher asked, his legs still crossed as he sat on the training mat in his room. Of course, Fisher. What's the matter? Udana asked, in an almost casual tone.
I had another dream, though I am hesitant to decide whether this dream was a vision of fate.
When he said that, there was a pause before Udana asked in a more serious tone.
Why? What happened in your dream? It felt too surreal. Everyone was merging together in a single mass, covered in countless mouths. At first, I thought that it was a void monster that managed to break through the defenses, so I rushed out to fight it in the void. But I did not see any monsters that had passed the barriers.
Udana paused, closing her eyes.
Do you have any other clues to go off of?
Fisher thought back to the dream, trying to remember anything that could prove to be a helpful hint. The few times in the past that he had had dreams of impending doom, the cause of said doom had been rather obvious, so he wasn't entirely sure what little hints to pick from.
It all started about 2 weeks after successful negotiations to set up a trade route with the Hajits city.
You believe that they are the cause? There was a hint of doubt in Udana's words, but Fisher quickly shook his head.
No, the problem began in Deccan. To my knowledge, none of the other worlds were affected, as a quarantine was put in place immediately.
In that case, something that happened as a response to them, Udana replied in a thoughtful tone. Is there anything else that you need to report, whether it is about this matter or anything else?
Fisher leaned back on his mat, recalling the news he had heard. The next generation of test shields were ready a week before this crisis began, and resulted in another round of failures. Thankfully, they chose to test with unmanned vessels this time. Additionally, the game that the Keeper has just released, it did not receive as much attention as others he let out in the past. I believe that is everything.
Within her room, Udana nodded her head, moving over to her desk to activate her terminal. She wanted to see if there was any new research projects that had been reported in the last few days, especially those made in response to the recent discovery of the Hajit and their civilization. In truth, there were too many. Historians that wanted to research how they came to be as advanced as they were without the assistance of the gods or the system, philosophers questioning their ethical values, researchers asking to study their teleportation pods that do not interact with the void. Closing her eyes, Udana let out a sigh, narrowing the search. From Fisher's report, it seemed like it could be a mimetic effect gone wrong. Potentially, there may have been a monster that came back with the second round of shield experiments to properly penetrate the newly enhanced barriers surrounding the solar system. However, since Fisher reported that those tests were unmanned, it stands to reason that the failures didn't bring anything back. If they had, that would have been something rather easy to tip him off. Thus, she looked for anything that could be related to mimetic scripts. And that was when she caught sight of the most likely candidate. Inspired by the news of the energy used by the Hajit for communication, a small group of researchers wanted to create a universal language that anyone would be able to understand and communicate in. Udana let out a long sigh when she heard that, planting her face in her hand.
This is why memes need to be regulated.
Is everything all right? Asnod spoke up, moving behind Udana to look at her screen. A universal language?
Fisher just got back to me, she said, shaking her head. He had another one of his fate dreams. Apparently this language is a meme that can mutate and cause all life on the planet to merge into a giant, amorphous blob.
That does not sound pleasant.
That's what I'm saying, Udana exclaimed, throwing her arms up. We already have a language that we all understand. As for meeting new races, we have numerous methods of providing real-time translation. Why do we need a language based on a mimetic script that can turn our insides into somebody else's outsides? Asnod simply gave a chuckle at that.
It should be easy enough for you to shut down their research. On a more pleasant note, are you planning to play that new game, Ascension?
Udana shrugged her shoulders, leaning back in her seat.
Maybe after they build it up a bit more. Since it's a total sandbox, there aren't any cities or anything. It shouldn't take long for them to build those up, like they did with World Seed. Though Fisher said that game didn't seem like it received much in the way of popularity.
Asnod nodded his head, bringing his hands up to grab and massage Udana's shoulders.
It will probably be more popular among those that have not yet achieved their first divinity.
Yeah, maybe. What have you been up to, though?
Udana asked, relaxing as she leaned back towards Asnod.
I've been thinking. According to Lifra's initial report, the Hajit's city looks like it has quite the interesting selection of food.
She mentioned a street food that resembled fried energy kernels. I thought that it might be a good idea for me to go and investigate, see if I can learn any new recipes.
Udana gave a small chuckle, nodding her head.
If you want. They aren't releasing the details of the alliance until tomorrow, though. If you want to go before that, just make sure you change your appearance to match the Hajit.
I'll be sure to do that, Asnod said, in a reassuring tone. Whenever the topic of new recipes came up, he was always eager to travel and find out exactly how it was produced. If he was able to incorporate it into his own recipes, he may be able to create amazing new flavors.
Sometime later, Asnod could be seen walking up to the gate on the 62nd floor. As he approached, his appearance changed to that of a brown-haired elf with glowing blue eyes. He stepped through the gate with a smile, immediately teleporting to a nearby alley, to avoid drawing any attention. After he left the alley, the first thing that he did was to walk the streets to look for the stalls that Lifra had mentioned in her report. Thankfully, it didn't take long for him to find them, and he began sweeping his senses over them. As soon as he did so, he was secretly astonished. They use a device that imbues a mix of natural energy and ki as a thin wrapping around refined grains of energy, seasoned with specially modified spiritual energy for additional flavor? Asnod looked at the price of the dish, determining it to be roughly 5 times the total energy contained within the food itself. Though that was normal. After all, this was an item that could be considered a luxury. Still, he chose to pay for a serving, receiving a small bucket of glowing green energy kernels. When he popped one into his mouth, he was surprised by the rich flavor. This could be a wonderful snack to market to gods or those who have achieved perfection. Walking down the street, he noticed several of such stalls, each having their own unique flavor. Naturally, Asnod sampled each of them, noting how the slight changes in energy mixtures brought about a great change in the taste of the food. Already, he was thinking about how he could take this information back to Deccan, and how it could cause a revolution in the fast food industry. Lifra huffed, breathing heavily as she stood atop the chest of a colossal figure with deep blue skin. She glared hard into his eyes.
All the work to track you down, and you still tried to go easy on me.
She was frustrated even more because the adult entity had only started to turn serious when he realized that he wasn't Lifra's match. Granted, she didn't plan to kill him or anything, just teach him a lesson. During her time hunting him down, she had noticed a few details about this layer's civilization. First of all, they weren't entirely barbaric. They greatly encouraged using battles to settle disputes, and even their children would fight one another
However, they had their own rules. Children fought children, and adults fought adults. Whenever children fought, their parents would always be watching from somewhere, ready to intervene if one of them started to take it too far. As for the adults, well, she had seen three cases of adults fighting to the death during her hunt. Lyfra couldn't help but shudder, realizing that the James that had first come through to Fior was actually still just a child by this race's standards. His first true demonstration of power as an adult was the incident in which he lifted the Palace of Deccan into the sky and punished those who tried to harm Chelsea's family. The adults in this lair were all very powerful, and were masterful druids even more skilled than the Golden Sylvans. Their very being was fused with natural energy, and they could control it with a simple thought. Still, despite the order that was maintained, Lyfra hadn't seen any signs of proper civilization throughout her chase. No cities, no villages. In fact, the only structures that she saw were those created by children.
"Listen here," Lyfra spoke, sending her voice directly into the mind of the figure via her spiritual energy. "I don't know your language. I don't know what your people call themselves. I don't even know if you have the concept of language. Go home, wherever that is. If anyone else tries to pick a fight with me, they'll get the same treatment. I'm going to go explore for a while," she said, before jumping off of his chest and flying into the air. Because James had left this lair prematurely, as well as the other one of this race that they found buried in a mountain, there had to be some form of mineral on this floor that connected elsewhere. Lyfra was determined to be the first to find it.
Chapter 97. Ashley sat in her office, going over the reports of the most recent game released, Ascension. She let out a small sigh, realizing that the numbers were speaking for themselves. In a persistent world with real-time development, very few players wanted to enjoy a full sandbox experience. Unless there was some unique mechanic that drastically changed the game itself, she could tell that Ascension would not be a very popular game. Moreover, within 3 days of the game's release, only 4 keepers purchased the game, 2 of those being from Dale's Guild. They still had plenty of leftover funds from when they sold World Seed, but they didn't see much potential for growth in this game's sales.
"It looks like we'll need to start working on NPCs, after all," she muttered, with a small sigh. There was a fine line between NPCs that did and did not have a soul. Even without a soul, there was the chance for realistic interaction, albeit some flaws may appear here and there. However, if the NPCs had their own souls, that would create ethical disputes among some keepers. This was why Ashley had not delved into this topic before, as it was a tricky subject to navigate that she had no experience with.
"For now, yeah, that should work." A small smile appeared on Ashley's face, and she reached for the phone at the corner of her desk. Without having to dial a number, it instantly began ringing on the other side.
"Jamira?" "That's right, ma'am. What can I do for you?"
The team manager of her programmers spoke up from the other end of the line.
"We're going to start the NPC project. The keeper said that we can use Anna as a base model, so try to create a working template."
"Understood, ma'am. How would you like us to test them out?"
Jamira asked curiously, a small smile appearing on her face.
"World Seed and Ascension. I want you to gradually begin populating these 2 games with the NPCs that the team creates. Of course, you can intervene with NPCs that have problems in their core template. We don't want to create problems for our players," Ashley instructed.
Filling these 2 games with the NPCs produced by her team would breathe new life into them, or at least that was Ashley's hope. Jamira seemed to understand the request, but posed another question.
"Do you have any roles in mind for these NPCs?"
This was where Ashley was hung up.
None of the games that they made had a story, so to speak. They were all complete sandboxes, with the players able to define their own paths. That wasn't to say that she wasn't able to come up with a story if need be, but she wasn't sure that she could make a captivating one that encapsulated an entire game world, down to the NPCs. As she thought about that, a name appeared in the back of her mind, a smile appearing on her face. "I'll get back to you on that. For now, focus on the core template of the NPCs. Right now, I need to go and have a meeting." After giving that answer, Ashley hung up the phone, closing her eyes to focus on her mortal incarnation. Ashley stood in a neatly pressed black suit, her wings folded over her shoulders, as she walked up to the door and rapped her knuckles against it. Almost immediately there was the sound of rushing steps. The door opened, and a halfling man appeared inside, smiling pleasantly at Ashley.
"Please, please come in. Thank you for calling ahead. I was nearly shocked out of my soul when I heard that you would be coming," he said, gesturing for her to enter.
They were currently at the halfling's mansion in Sanctum, so there was quite a lot of lavish decoration.
"Thank you for agreeing to see me, Galahan," Ashley responded as she entered the mansion, where Galahan clapped his hands. Four maids all appeared from nowhere, guiding the duo to a large sitting room.
"No matter, no matter at all. Tell me, what brings you here today? I can't imagine one of the greater Pantheon was simply visiting me for a house call, after all." Galahan smiled, hopping onto one of the chairs placed around the room, sitting across from Ashley once she sat down.
"Indeed." Ashley nodded her head in agreement.
"In truth, I would like to acquire your services, Galahan."
"My services?"
The halfling blinked in confusion.
"I fail to see how one such as I can be useful to the greater Pantheon."
"It's quite simple. Are you aware of the game that we have recently released, titled Ascension?" she asked, to which Galahan offered a small nod. "Due to a lack of any significant story or world development, this game is quite lacking in popularity among the people of the world."
Galahan paused, once more sporting a look of confusion.
"You wish for me to write a story for your games?" he asked, but immediately followed it up with another question. "I'm not quite sure I understand. Although I may have the skills required, I believe that you have someone much more close at hand that could do the job as well, do you not?"
"If you're referring to Lyphra, yes and no," Ashley said with a long sigh.
"Lyphra does indeed possess the skill to do what we want, if we could get her to focus for a long period of time. She is prone to becoming distracted, or will alter the story given to her to make it more exciting. I'd rather every old man NPC secretly be a hidden sage capable of destroying a country."
Ashley shook her head as she spoke, causing Galahan to chuckle knowingly.
"We all have the urge to spice up a story we are given. I can understand the lady's thoughts, though it could be problematic if she goes too far off script, or if she leaves a project waiting to entertain her flights of fancy. That's why you came to me, I take it?"
"That's right," Ashley confirmed with a nod. "You are known for your professionalism, while having a level of story creation not inferior to Lyphra's. Thus, I would like to work closely with you when developing the storylines for current and future games."
Galahan gave a small smile. "I don't think that shall be a problem, though I am curious how you expect this cooperation to take place. Are you planning to hire me under the name of Dark Flame Technologies?"
Ashley closed her eyes, thinking about that.
"I could. Honestly, I would like to invite you to live among the Pantheon. That way you could work directly with my team when designing the story and characters. Of course, you would still be able to appear in this world in a similar manner to how I am here now. If you don't wish for that, it would not be a problem to set up a communication channel between my team and yourself through the mortal world."
Galahan's eyes went wide when he heard Ashley's offer.
"You mean to let me become one of your heroic spirits? I do not believe that I have earned such a title through any meaningful sacrifice."
Ashley paused, but ultimately shook her head.
This would be different from the heroic spirit system, as it would be by my own discretion. Of course, I would still need the Keeper's approval. But I do not think that will be a problem. You would function as you currently do, but also work together with my team among the Pantheon to create these stories. Galahan leaned back in his seat, contemplating the offer. My apologies, my dear, but I feel that I must decline this offer. Not the offer of working for you, but rather of joining you among the Pantheon. Should I allow myself to be received by the Pantheon, it would spark controversy and discord among the populace. Regardless of whether it is a personal recruitment or the joining of heroic spirits, there would be many calling that I was unworthy of such an honor. Before Ashley could speak, Galahan lifted a hand to cut her off. I am well aware that it is your decision to determine who is and is not worthy, but public opinion is still incredibly important. Should this unrest be left unsettled, then any contribution that I make while under your care will be tainted with this view. I only achieved such results due to the nepotism of the Pantheon, and so forth. The interest in your games could see a sharp decline, simply by having my name attached to them. For all parties involved, I believe that the best course of action moving forward is to have me work as a contractor within the mortal world. I am not hindered in my performance of my duties from here, so there is no downside. If, one day, I meet my permanent demise, at that time my contributions may be weighed against Terra's scales. Should those contributions prove me worthy of a spot among you and your fellows, I will happily accept, as would the public. Ashley let out another sigh upon hearing his answer, seeing that he was finished with his explanation. I see. I may have been too hasty with my offer. In that case, I will work to create a suitable work environment from which you can communicate with my team. Do you have any questions or requests with regard to this while I'm here? Galahan closed his eyes, crossing his arms over his chest. I believe that I can supply most of the production with my divine powers. My primary question would be this. To what extent do you want me to write this story? This time, at least, Ashley had an answer that she could give right away. The NPCs should not be fully developed intelligences possessing their own souls. However, it would be best to have them as close to lifelike as possible. You will be in charge of providing the overall setting information, as well as specific NPC personality templates. At the same time, if there are any adjustments that we need to make on our end to have the story flow more naturally, you can make such requests. Galahan nodded his head at that. As I said, most of this can be applied via my divinity. Am I to take games from other keepers, such as Vision Expanse or Fragments of Acidia, to be my guidelines for the level of complexity? Ashley's brow twitched at that, but she knew that there were many people that understood that those games didn't truly originate from Dale. Furthermore, her presence here all but confirmed that fact. That's correct. If you can create a galactic stage on the scale of Fragments of Acidia, I would honestly be amazed. Galahan couldn't help but snort softly. Such a stage need not start so massive. Rather, all you need is the basic layout, and the script writes itself. I say that I want to create a setting spanning an entire galaxy, and then detail the major forces within that galaxy. From there, I list key roles in each major force that shapes how that force functions. With just a little playing around, various other roles begin to appear on their own, going so far down as the merchants you find on the side of the road. This is the essence of my creation, to fill in the smaller details by way of referencing the grand plan. The same can apply to history, looking at what exists today and asking how we came to this point. Ashley listened to Galahan explain and smiled slightly when he finished. I think that will work quite well for our needs then. Galahan let out a light chuckle, hopping to his feet. I'll be waiting for your call in that case. As for payment, I trust that the Greater Pantheon won't be stingy and will supply me with a fair price for my service. Chapter 98. I was surprised when I learned that Ashley had gone to outsource the story of her games to Galahan rather than Lyfra. From the start, I had simply assumed that it would be Lyfra filling the role of a writer for her. It was sort of her thing, after all.
However, when Ashley mentioned the same argument that she had given the halfling, that being Lifra's total inability to remain still and focus on the task at hand, I suddenly became more understanding. I mean, sure, she has periods where she can focus on her writing. She has actually written quite a lot of books that have grabbed the public interest. But those periods are few and far between. Galahan, on the other hand, has few distractions. He was one of the first mortal gods, and has more divine energy than he knows what to do with. Literally, he doesn't know what to do with his power, which led to him creating testing grounds for various scripts and performances in his own home. Ultimately, I think that Ashley made the right decision, though we'll have to see how the cooperation works out. It will be pretty hard to actively work together on a project if I have to fast-forward the world for any reason in the future. There could be decades where he was simply unable to receive a response back from them. I brought this up with Ashley, and she simply shrugged her shoulders, telling me that it was his decision. Granted, I didn't really intend to fast-forward more than I absolutely needed to at this point. There was a good chance that doing so would cause me to suddenly advance in rank at this point. Speaking of which, that brought me to my current situation, where I was approaching James's research facility. I had already sent Chelsea a message to let her incarnation know that I was coming, so I was unsurprised to see her waiting outside of the entrance for me. There was an almost anxious look on her face when I approached, and I could guess what was going through her mind. "Is he here?" I asked, with a smile, and she nodded her head. "Honestly, he never leaves. Makes it really easy to find him. You're sure that it was the same race, though? It wasn't just a different race with similar characteristics, and his true race is on another planet in Lifra's universe somewhere?" I blinked at her question before letting out a light chuckle. Honestly, I had considered the possibility myself. If such had been the case, it was likely that we wouldn't have been able to do this until I reached at least the 6th rank. Thankfully, I checked before I came. He has all of the usual options when I highlight him now. Previously, because James was not considered one of my assets, I was not able to highlight him. I couldn't select him for any commands or even directly follow his history. It took quite a bit longer to retrace his steps, as I had to follow the history of the world around him, which meant if he teleported, I had to manually figure out where he went. Now, however, there was no such restrictions on him within the system. Chelsea nodded her head, turning and leading me into the elevator. "Section 3, Corridor 1," she called out, and the elevator began to descend, before abruptly moving horizontally. When the door of the elevator opened again, we exited out into the pristine white halls of the research group. Not far away, I could see where James had his office set up, mostly because Tracia and Nora were waiting there in front of it. "Was everyone told that I was coming today?" I asked in exasperation. Chelsea nodded her head. "I mentioned that you wanted to talk to James, and they got concerned. I didn't tell them what it was about, obviously, but still." I gave a small nod, walking towards the office. "None of you need to worry. What I have to talk to him about isn't something major. It's just a topic that I felt needed to be discussed face to face." The other girls seemed to relax slightly at that, Chelsea walking over to usher them away. "Come on, we have the data on the last set of experiments to go over." When I entered the office, I found James sitting behind his desk, typing away at his terminal. He didn't appear to have heard my entrance, too focused on his own work. It wasn't until I cleared my throat that he looked up at me, smiling. "Ah, you came. Chell told me that I should be expecting you." I smiled at that, moving to sit across from him. "Did she tell you what I was here for?" To that, James simply shook his head. "Afraid not. She just said that you would be stopping by." "Well, to start things off, we reached the 64th floor of Fior. You have officially been recognized by the world system." James seemed surprised at that, meaning that that report had not yet reached his office. That, or he simply didn't pay much attention to the news on Fior. "Additionally, are you familiar with the system known as the Heavenly Gate?" When I asked that question, James shook his head again.
It's a system that can only be activated by reaching the fourth rank as a keeper without resetting any of your worlds. Because of that, not many people really care about the system.
Sounds rather extravagant. So, what does it do? Let you turn a mortal into a god? He asked, seeming to guess based on the name.
Close, but not quite. I can pay 10,000 points to give someone access to the Heavenly Gate. Once they have that access, they can visit the admin room whenever they want. The only restriction is that the transfer process takes 30 seconds.
So it's not like you'll be doing it in combat or anything like that.
James blinked, seeming to lean back in his seat and ponder that information.
If you're telling me this, that must mean that you plan to offer me this position?
I gave a small nod of confirmation. That's right. I wanted to give you the chance to be able to visit Chelsea in the admin room. Additionally, this is a form of life insurance. Should anything happen to you in the mortal world, you will immediately be transferred to the admin room as a full companion. Personally, I don't see any downsides to this, aside from the cost, but I didn't want to just apply it to you without coming and talking to you about it first.
I appreciate that, James said, still mulling it over. Like you said, there aren't particularly any downsides. I assume that those with this gate are able to participate in defensive invasions?
I gave a nod at that. As for offensive ones, I don't know what would happen if I tried to send them. It might invalidate the gate entirely, or only register you as dead when the invasion ended. Either way, I wasn't planning to send you on any invasions to begin with.
I'd certainly hope not, James snorted, shaking his head.
I'm all too aware just how high the mortality rate is for an invasion.
Besides, there's too much of a risk that somebody would recognize me, right?
I fell silent when he brought that up, and he looked at me with a knowing smile. Even if I accept your invitation, it wouldn't be a good idea for me to go to the regular meetings. I'm in a rather unique position, from my understanding, and we can't afford to let other keepers catch wind of it.
That's right. I nodded my agreement.
Sure, there may be ways for other keepers to create a former keeper as a companion, but their system companion would likely be forced to limit what knowledge they kept in the process. For instance, if I created James back when I was only at the second rank, it's unlikely that he would retain his knowledge from the fourth rank. By that logic, it was the exposure to James that allowed me to recreate Chelsea in such a complete state. Even if he wasn't one of my assets, the system did acknowledge that I interacted with him in some form.
Personally, it doesn't matter to me much either way, James admitted, stretching his arms out above his head. Whether I have access to the admin room or not won't change anything for me, aside from that life insurance you mentioned. And, let's be perfectly honest, if anything did happen to me, Chell would travel to the ends of creation to find a way to fix it. We lost each other once, after all.
I couldn't help but give another nod, imagining that would happen. A shiver went down my spine, picturing Chelsea just appearing in my office, demanding I make it better.
Right.
Still, I think it would be better to do it than not, I said, planning to apply it the next time I was in the admin room. At the very least, it will be there if we decide that we need it.
James simply chuckled, not immediately responding.
Looking over at his terminal, I couldn't help but ask, "How is the world creation research coming along?" When I asked that, James broke out into a genuine grin, seeming pleased to discuss his findings.
"It's doing great, actually. Now that we are beyond the level of development that my world was at in terms of energy control, I am learning so many new things. So far, we've still only done the first round of world creation experiments, but just that has already given us so much data to review.
I'm not sure if you're aware, but one of the worlds that we created was a potentially viable world. The only problem was that it was created without any form of time acceleration inherent, so there was naught but cosmic dust. Chell believes that if we add in enough of a time factor, the world would have been perfectly livable. Unfortunately, such a time factor would require millions, if not billions, of years, so we couldn't exactly wait. That's why, for our next batch, we're planning to include a time scale like that.
As you know, time is rather subjective in the void. With the proper tampering, it wouldn't be difficult for time to be rapidly accelerated for a single world, similar to the Keeper's controls in the admin room. If we use that, it could turn a potentially viable world into a new frontier. After he said that, he let out a long sigh. Of course, this is still only creating a world with the existing structures. It would be similar to a more advanced version of how Tubrok and Rion created the universe where the March is. Just more independent. If we want to get into the real meat of the research, we'll need to figure out how to create a world that has its own custom system. I couldn't stop myself from blinking as he began talking passionately, making sure that I was keeping up with him. If you can do something like that, doesn't that mean that it's possible to rapidly accelerate time in any world? I asked, hesitantly. That would be an awful form of attack, accelerating a world so much that all life simply dies. Personally, I'd be more concerned with the opposite happening, James pointed out, lifting one hand. If the time is accelerated inside the world, that means that they literally have all of the time in the world to come up with a solution. They could have fallen gods leave the world to fight the enemies. However, if it were the other way around, and they instead froze time inside a world, it would be the enemies that had all the time that they needed to destroy that world. Regardless, I'm not sure how one would achieve such a method of time control in either direction just yet. On an incomplete world, it is feasible due to the thin barrier surrounding the world. Once that world barrier becomes dense enough, such manipulations are naturally prevented, and the flow of time is stabilized. At that point, it would take a higher order of technology to alter the flow of time, or intervention from the admin room. I gave a small nod at that, glad that I wouldn't need to worry about such attacks. At least, not for a while, yet. Chapter 99. After the second round of negotiations with the Hadjit, it wasn't long before the big announcement was sent out through the city, informing everyone of the new alliance with the rest of Fior. One thing that was nice was the fact that the pre-made broadcast that the Thought Bugs created was still perfectly usable now that they were out of the picture. After all, they were still keeping their existence confidential, so they only included what the public would need to hear in the first place. Admittedly, there was a bit of unrest within their city for a time. People watching the gate as if it was an exhibit at the zoo while waiting for anyone to come through. When they did go through, these people briefly scattered, as if scared off. Thankfully, the Hadjit were strong enough to not let themselves be pushed around by the more forceful adventurers of Fior, but also peaceful enough that they didn't try to start any problems themselves. Ultimately, it wasn't long before an awkward alliance began, with the Hadjit incredibly curious about their new allies, while the adventurers were similarly curious about the Hadjit culture. Meanwhile, Lifra had long since reported back about the next floor and the rather violent occupants of it. When the guild learned of the circumstances of this floor, they considered passing it entirely, once they found the gate to the next one. After all, the fact that the occupants were said to be as powerful as James was no joke, with even Lifra needing to get serious to bring one down. This meant that most adventurers would be incapable of surviving on that floor. On the other hand, Lifra reported back with a far more shocking piece of information. This one kept confidential between herself, the higher-ups of the guild, and the Pantheon themselves. "I'm sorry, what is this?" I asked, glancing towards the obsidian-like rock that Lifra had deposited on my desk. Although I could identify the rock with my keeper insight, the information returned was rather confusing.
"Like I said, it's the first step of James's journey," Lifra smiled proudly, pointing to the rock. "You know how we went all over the place before finally settling in the natural energy core of Fior? From what I can tell, this is what started that journey."
"And where does it lead to?"
I asked, with a hesitant tone, as that information was not provided by the keeper identification.
No clue, she said with a broad grin, but whatever it is, the gravity is far less than the 64th floor.
My eyes widened when I heard that. Did you explore the area on the other side?
With a clone? I know the routine, especially since there was the off chance that this could lead to the outermost layer. The first thing the clone reported back was the lower gravity, and then it went to explore. There were no signs of habitation, and it managed to find the gate within about half a day, but it couldn't pass through.
My brow knit together, thinking. There are a few possibilities. Obviously, this is another planet in Fjord's universe. But if your clone couldn't pass through, then the system on the planet Fjord isn't connected to other systems in some way. Whether they each have their own level restriction or not, it's hard to say. Lifra crossed her arms, tilting her head.
Wouldn't that mean that we won't be able to explore other worlds of Fjord, even if we eventually reach the outside?
I don't know, I said with a shake of my head. I can't answer that right now. Either the systems will only link up when we reach that outer layer, or we will need to find some mechanism to bypass the black walls and make it directly to the center and work our way out. Lifra blinked at that before her eyes widened.
Oh, the system wouldn't just completely lock you out of something you purchased. But it will stick to the guidelines, right? What if there's a gate at the outermost floor that leads all the way to the center?
My eye twitched when I heard that. I would honestly rather that not be the case, since it means that every planet we discover within Fjord has to be explored from the inside out. And if the systems aren't connected, that means that we'll need to send the weakest of our people to explore the first few floors. Even children commonly had levels ranging from the dozens to over 100, meaning that they wouldn't be able to explore these worlds until the 10th floor of them had been produced. Thankfully, Lifra was able to think of an explanation for that, too.
That's easy. We just have to get people from Lorik or Spica that have never entered the other world system. As long as we do that, they won't have any levels in Fjord's system, but we'll still have plenty of strength to explore.
I gave a small pause before nodding my head. If that happened, it wouldn't be so bad. After all, a single cultivator of Lorik would be able to easily reach through the first 30 floors. The hardest part would be finding all of the different orbs on each floor to let others through. If an immortal is sent, they may even be able to reach the limit. Of course, this was something to worry about in the distant future. For now, there was something far more important. If this was the first step of his journey, then there should be other materials on the other side that lead to the next step, I pointed out. However, Lifra shrugged her shoulders.
I'm not sure. My clone didn't notice anything. But this might not be the only one of these rocks on that floor. If more than one appeared, he might have taken that one instead. All I know is that this is definitely the type of material that he used to travel.
I nodded my head at that. From what I could tell, using Lifra's report and what the system told me, this rock should be made of a similar material as the black stone walls, only in a much weaker form. Rather than remaining indestructible and blocking all forms of energy from passing through, it simply maintained the ability to connect to a linked stone. It could be assumed that the black stone walls were either a refined version of this rock, or they were an alloy that used the rocks as a key component. Regardless, this warranted further study.
Have you tried getting Aurevi to help you bring the other sample back?
Lifra's shoulders deflated slightly.
I tried, but she said that she couldn't. Apparently, even her powers can't bring people in and out of a locked floor like that, unless we find two sets of rocks that both lead to the same destination. I don't think we'll be able to find a matching pair.
That was annoying, to say the least. Still, I nodded the head,
passing the rock back to Lifra. This one doesn't have any properties that block out energies, so see if it can be scanned and replicated. Meanwhile, have your clone continue to explore the other side, just to make sure that this isn't the same place that James went to. Lifra nodded her head, offering a quick salute.
Yes, sir. Though, can we just have James go and see if it's familiar?
At that, I couldn't help but shrug my shoulders. Most likely, he wouldn't recognize it even if it was the same place. He wasn't there for long if it was the right spot, and that was so long ago at this point that it shouldn't have left enough of an impression.
Right. Lifra nodded her head. Anyways, I'll be right back.
After she said that, Lifra turned and ran out of my office with the stone. She returned a few minutes later, now carrying two identical rocks.
It worked, she announced proudly. But I should warn you, they both go to the same spot. I tested it after making the copy.
I assumed that would be the case, so what's the problem? When I asked that, Lifra set the rocks down, one on each side of the room.
The problem is that the other side is also linked to both of them, she said,
sending out a small pulse of mana, likely a signal to the clone that she had waiting on the other side. A moment later, shreds of blue slime began to spew out of both of the stones in thin ribbons. These ribbons slid along the floor, eventually coalescing into a clone of Lifra. The clone looking wholly unamused by the no doubt painful experience. So, travel is essentially one way now, unless it is someone like yourself that can survive being split like this. I furrowed my brow at the thought. Honestly, an energy being could do something similar, but it was far more natural for her. If a normal god were to undertake that process, they might lose their focus halfway through and accidentally disperse their body.
That's right, Lifra nodded her head. I was hoping that copying the stone would give me a new set linked to each other. But nope, just silly string slime.
I let out a long sigh at that, nodding in agreement. Okay, continue exploring the other side with your clone, and get the World Spirit of Fior to help you find any other stones that might be on that floor. Lifra offered another salute, taking the two stones with her as she left the room. Leaning back in my seat, I closed my eyes, mentally communicating with Terra. Why does it feel like the time to explore other worlds of Fior is coming increasingly closer? I thought that it wouldn't be for decades. No, centuries still. There was an amused chuckle from the other side, Terra responding in a comforting tone. It still could be. The only way that this would lead to early exploration would be if one of these stones led to either the very top or the central floor of another world. And for our sake, I would hope that it wouldn't be the former. I nodded my head in agreement. With how many void monsters regularly latch onto Fior's world, even with our patrols, I could only imagine the utter devastation that the top floor had become. The laws of physics might not even be the same anymore, for all I knew. Agreed. I'd like to steer clear of the outermost floor for as long as possible. Of course, we would need to confront it eventually, but eventually was supposed to still be a long time away from now. That was the continued hope, at least. Back on the 64th floor of Fior, Lifra cleared her throat.
Little friend, I've got a job to do.
The natural energy around Lifra shifted, condensing in a green swirl that took the form of a small halfling girl, wearing a green shirt, brown pants, and a backpack. The world spirit of Fior looked around, a look of curiosity on her face.
Why does this lair feel familiar? She asked, curiously.
Yeah, about that. This is the lair that James comes from. The keeper asked me to bring you here to help me find something.
When the spirit heard that, her eyes widened in surprise. Lifra quickly held up a hand to stop her.
Before you go running off to meet them, the people on this layer are really violent. Like smash your face in because you looked at them wrong violent. James was the smart one and got away when he did.
The small spirit visibly deflated when she heard that, though Lifra smiled again.
Thankfully, we're not here to fight them. What we're here to do is try to retrace the path that James took in order to get where you originally found him. The first step is finding more of these rocks, she said, producing one of the two black stones that she had in her possession.
Hearing that they were going to be retracing James's step, excitement once again returned to the spirit's features, clearly eager to see what he had gone through to find his way to the natural energy core. Chapter 100. Lifra ran through the rocky plateaus of the 64th floor, the world spirit floating alongside her. The spirit had already identified another cluster of black rocks that were embedded in a cave wall far away, so the duo were quickly making their way over. At first, Lifra had wanted to simply teleport to the cave